So, from this story, we now know what grace looks like and tastes like and smells like and feels like, as well as what it sounds like. Grace is one of those words which is always tough to define. In Greek, the word is charis, and so when it was translated into Latin, they kind of just set the words over, and charis became charity, which was the word for grace. In English, trying to translate it, we've looked at it in terms of things like sheer generosity, generous dealings, undeserved love, free gift. That's how we are to understand grace. But John in our gospel doesn't try to define grace by giving us a sentence definition. John defines grace in terms of an event, and that event involves wine. Why wine? Not because it's just supposed to make us a little tipsy and feel good if we have too much, but wine is understood as particularly in a celebration to symbolize joy and blessing and hospitality and generosity. And particularly at a marriage feast, it signifies blessing, so that their life together may flow as generously and as graciously as the wine is flowing at the feast. And now we've got a problem. The wine has stopped flowing. No more wine. And it's early on in the celebration. Marriage celebrations usually lasted at least 3 days. And we kind of get the hint there that they've run out already after day one. This is terrible. Because if wine is that sign of blessing, this means this marriage is doomed. This marriage is cursed. There's no blessing. So what does Jesus do? He provides the wine. And not just enough wine for all the guests for 3 days, but given the quantity that's in those 6 water jars, there would be enough wine for all those guests for at least 3 weeks. What we see here is the understanding of the overflowing of blessing and generosity, of joy and hospitality. That perhaps the best way of understanding and interpreting grace in this event is to use the word abundance. Now again, abundance or abounding comes from 2 Latin words that mean more waves. Ab is more and unda is wave. And so it's a picture that if something is abundant or abounding, it's just like at the sea, where the waves come rolling in and rolling in and rolling in and rolling in nonstop, wave after wave after wave. Wave after wave after wave of grace abounding. Is what we have in this story. The understanding of God's overflowing and abounding grace. What's also significant here is that this is the first act that Jesus does in his public ministry. And often the first thing you do kind of sets the tone and gives one an understanding of what's going to keep coming. And here, at least, John wants to make it very clear that the foundation of Jesus' ministry is to show the overflowing abundance of God's grace. In fact, that's precisely who Jesus is. The overflowing abundance of God's grace for us incarnated, so that we can see and hear and know what grace is by seeing grace in action. John sets the theme for his gospel by saying it's about God's overflowing grace. Now, the thing is that most of us usually calculate how our lives are going in terms of scarcity, not abundance. How's your life going? Well, don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. I don't really feel secure enough about anything or everything. I'm not sure how good my health is. And on it goes. Scarcity and lack. And when we have those senses of scarcity and lack, what arises from that is fear. And marketers and politicians know very well how scarcity and fear work. Are your teeth white enough? Is your breath fresh enough? If it's not, isn't your job in danger? Aren't you worried about losing friends? Isn't the relationship between you and your partner going to be jeopardized if you don't have white teeth and fresh breath? Relax. We have the toothpaste. We have the mouthwash just for you. Or do you have problems making ends meet because the taxes are too high? Worried about immigrants coming in, taking your jobs, depleting our social safety network? Or what about, are we providing the sufficient funds for adequate health care when I need it? Well, let me assuage your fears. We of the Conservatives, the Liberals, the NDP, the Greens, we have the plan, we have the policy that can deal with this scarcity and put your fears to rest. We all live in this world where people look at the things in terms of scarcity and the fears that are then aroused. But grace is not like that. God's grace is not at work just because we lack something. This is where the theologians of the Middle Ages got it wrong. They talked about grace as donatum super additum, a super added gift. You see, their understanding was that when God created human beings, God created them in such a way that they could kind of sort of have that faithful relationship with God, but it wasn't quite enough by nature standards. And so what God had to do was kind of top us off a little bit with some donatum super additum, you know, like kind of high octane in your gasoline. you know, a little super added gift so that we could have the right faithful relationship with God. And then what happened in Genesis 3 is Adam and Eve got kind of uppity and said, hey, you know, I think we can handle our relationship with God very well on our own. Thank you. We don't need super added grace. And boom, everything fell apart. But you see, that's not the way grace truly works. Grace has been abounding and abundant from the very beginning of creation. In fact, the act of creation itself is nothing but grace, just like redemption. Any of you from a farm background know about grace? How many kernels are there in one head of wheat? From one kernel, look at all the kernels you get. And gardeners, you know about grace. How many cucumbers or how much zucchini do you get from one seed? That's grace. That's abundance that's there. And grace, it's at work, a King of Glory too. Probably I spend far too much time calculating the scarcity level here at King of Glory. Are we going to make our budget? Are we going to be able to carry through with our benevolence projects? And on and on. And yet, it looks like we closed out 2018 with at least a $3,000 surplus. And we've contributed more toward our benevolence projects than we have in past years. And next week, again, is the blessing of the quilt. Those quilters, when they first started out, go for it, good for you, I thought and said and figured in my own calculations, well, you know, they'll get together and they'll probably, you know, do a quilt a week and they'll be doing 30, maybe 40 quilts a year, and that's great. Last year, over 200 quilts. What are these women doing in Bev Gregory's basement? It's not illegal because they've all had to have police record checks and they passed. So we know it's not that. So the other alternative, it's got to be grace. It's got to be God's grace at work and overflowing in that project and in all the projects and in all the other activities you are doing in your lives. God's grace is overflowing in your life. That's what God is all about. That's what Jesus is all about. And this story of Jesus turning water into wine is precisely showing us the event of God's grace at work. What's our problem then? It's pretty simple. It's the same difficulty the steward had when he tasted the wine. The remark was, he didn't know where it came from. And that's what happens to us so frequently, isn't it? We just forget. We forget that our lives and all of creation is overflowing with God's grace, with God's abundance. And so instead of seeing the generosity, the joy, the blessing that is there, we keep calculating the scarcity and living in fear. But John again makes it abundantly clear. We know where that good gracious wine is coming from. We know that God is at work in the world graciously, shown forth in the life and death and resurrection of Jesus. And we see that constantly, continually, and surprisingly at work in our lives.